subsection two, he considers
it. Well, you brought one too.
I keep bringing three now. Are you sharing?
If I get light, I'll let you know.
Good afternoon. Let's call to order the House Committee on Land Use for Thursday, April 23rd, 2009.
Thanks.
I'm going to take the chair's prerogative and move some items around on the agenda a little to accommodate the one item that's posted for public hearing. I think we have at least one person here for public testimony on that, and I want to make sure we get that done. So I want to open a public hearing on House Bill 3368. As you'll note from the posting, this bill is being heard for the purpose of discussing amendments that would replace the entire content of the bill. Mr. Hoyt, thank you. And so because of that, it does not really make sense for us to have an overview of the bill because the amendment would change the bill. But I'd like to invite Steve Pfeiffer to come and talk about, is it a dash three amendment? Mr. Pfeiffer. And you probably know, but we would like your name identified first for our recorded media.
Thank you, Chair Nolan, members of the committee. Stephen Pfeiffer, address 1120 Northwest Cooch, Portland 97204. Here today on behalf of my client, Joseph Angel, who is one of the property owners who would be affected by this bill. Simply stated, this bill, I believe, is an extension. I apologize, I've just handed out my written testimony together with a map, and the map may very well be helpful. This bill, I view, is an extension of what many of you recall is Senate Bill 1011, which is the bill which came out of the session of the legislature last session and authorized Metro to seek urban and rural reserve designations as an alternative approach to the traditional boundary amendment process. Metro, to their credit, has taken up that opportunity, is deep into the throes of that process, and the map that I have attached and provided you is a good illustration of the success they've had to date, in that that's one of the first maps to be produced by the counties depicting their recommendation, Multnomah County in this case, for lands which would be subject to urban reserves and lands which would be subject, obviously tentative early phase, to rural reserves. The effect of those two designations would identify, as the labels suggest, those lands which over the period of the next 50 years, if adopted, probably in 2010 if it's adopted, those lands which would be available over the next 50 years for urbanization or expansion of the urban growth boundary as needed, and those lands which would be prohibited, namely the rural reserve lands, from any inclusion in an urban growth boundary expansion for that period of time. This gets me to a very specific point of the bill. On that map, which you see on about the center of the map, west of what we would see is Portland, right above Forest Heights on Skyline Road, is an area that's an L-shaped area crosshatched with yellow. Underneath that is a shaded light brown, if I have my maps correctly. This area in yellow is represents 416 acres of land lying inside the city limits of Portland, but outside and adjacent to the urban growth boundary. It's been that way since the late, early 80s, basically. It's about the 7 or 8 mile point on Skyline near Saltzman, where it meets Skyline. The point would be that land has been in the city, but not part of the urban growth boundary. But the city of Portland in 1991, on those 416 acres, 48 acres of which is Mr. Angel's property, applied an overlay zone, and it remains in place, which restricts development of that property, or rather land divisions or parcelization, to one unit per 20 acres. The underlying zoning on those lands, again in yellow, is one unit per 2 acres, all acknowledged, consistent with the statewide planning goals and in place. The city put that overlay zone in place for one reason, and that was to preserve those lands for future urbanization in larger blocks, 20 acres, so that when and if they do come into the boundary, they can be more efficiently divided into small parcels with maximum utilization of infrastructure. Not an uncommon approach, perfectly reasonable, and frankly makes a lot of sense. Unless and until, and this is the substance of this proposed bill, unless and until the lands under that overlay as part of the urban reserve process become rural reserves, which means the rationale for at least 50 years will disappear. The bill is drafted working with Metro and the City of Portland and DLCD. We've made it very clear that this legislation, if it becomes effective, would take place only upon these lands not being in part of an urban reserve. In other words, they're not going to be urbanized in the next 50 years. And it is limited to the overlay zone. The net effect of this bill, if it were adopted, is simply that overlay zone designation, if these lands are not part of an urban reserve, would become void. Now, the question I suspect will come, why wouldn't the city, or why wouldn't we as property owners, approach the city and simply, through the normal course, ask for that zoning to be removed instead? I've included in my written testimony some of the rationale for that. We've been working with the city, to their credit, they've been working with us on this for a number of years. And the reason that we've elected to bring this to this body and see if this relief can come to pass is really threefold. First of all, for us, for the city to be able to do it, and the city has been candid with me and has shared the information, as you can imagine, days of waning public dollars, the Bureau of Planning facing budget cuts in the city of Portland of up to 45% right now, they are having a hard time prioritizing this kind of a measure for reasons I can fully appreciate. It could be years, even though there's no real disagreement on the need for it, or the logic of it, it could be years before they could be able to do that. If the private property owners were to undertake it, each individual application would come with a filing fee of $25,000, no matter whether you're 1 acre or 2 acres or 25 or 48, as in our case. And just as a matter of personal practice, because I do this quite often, I have rarely approached a city with a request to modify a comprehensive plan or zone map without making it very clear what the implications of that decision would be, which means I always bring a concurrent development application so the city could condition that map removal on that development proposal. In this case, if we were to do that, it would probably be in excess of $100,000. It would be a development project proposal that would probably reduce the density of up to maybe 20 units clustered on a portion of the site. We've been working with Metro to donate 5 to 6 to 8 acres of land to the park as part of that. The point there being, though, absent this bill, we would be left to come forward and spend in excess of $100,000 and still not know whether that overlay zone policy removal decision would happen. Those are simply the reasons I would offer, anticipating a question of why we would be asking the legislature to undertake this. Again, and I'll leave you with this, I've worked with Metro and the city, and my understanding is that with the language you have before you, they're neutral at worst. And DLCD, the department, I think, is pretty much in the same place with the language we have. It's been carefully constructed, and I'm certainly here to entertain any questions.
Madam Chair.
Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm quite familiar with this land. It's in my district. And could there be any other reason why you might not want to let it up to the city? I mean, such as the fact that the neighborhood has been strenuously opposing any urbanization in this place? Does that have anything to do with here?
No. Chair Nolan, Representative Greenlick. Actually, I would expect many stakeholders to be involved. I actually live adjacent to Forest Park myself, and I've been a member of Forest Park, Prince Forest Park, for a while. They're going to be involved, as they are with numerous applications up there. This does not take them out of that loop, though, because, as you well know, if this action were to come to pass and the overlay zone were to be removed, the next step in this process for this property or the rest of the remaining 90% or thereabouts, the land carries an RF zone designation. It's 1 unit per 2 acres. This property, again, 48 equals roughly 23 units with rounded. It's got environmental overlays on it. There is no proposal to modify the comprehensive plan, the zoning, or the overlay zone designations. In other words, it would require a planned unit development proposal with full public hearing review, opportunity for review and appeal all the way through the city council on through. So this wouldn't have the effect of taking those opportunities off the table. It would merely have the effect of letting us go forward with that. Again, you know, we'll work with those folks and the stakeholders, because the concept, in all honesty, is not spreading 1 unit for 2 acres willy-nilly over 48, because that's the worst of all possible scenarios for everybody. The concept would be to cluster. We've already had the pre-application conference. We've already drawn the plan and submitted to the city in draft. Would be to cluster these up next to what, you know, Representative Greenlick, is the right at that intersection of Saltzman, where the gravel begins, and the road skyline. And the remainder then would be left open space to the extent that, again, we're hoping the 5 to 6, Metro would like to acquire 5 to 6 acres of that for, in addition to the park.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Clem, I'll remind the committee that we don't have a fiscal impact statement. We've requested one, haven't we? But we don't have it back yet on this amendment, so we won't be able to move the bill today anyway. Okay. But I wanted, since Mr. Pfeiffer had taken the effort to be here to testify, for him to be able to present the proposal, but understand that I'll be carrying this bill over until Tuesday because we won't be able to move it today. Representative Clem.
Just one question. I remember a parcel on a bill last time. I think that because of some of the terms like urban reserve that are used, it probably wouldn't apply, but my understanding is there's a number of places around the state where something like this exists. Near Tangent, there's a number where they're inside the city of Albany but outside the UGB. Salem's got the one in West Salem. That was the bill, and there was quite an effort inside the city of Salem, outside the UGB. Because of some of these phrases around urban reserves and metropolitan service districts, would it not apply to some of these other places?
Absolutely right. Madam Chair, Representative Clem, it is absolutely limited to the Metropolitan Urban Growth Boundary, which also is the only place now generally where you can do urban and rural reserves. So it would only apply in those lands. And you are correct. There are lands in the city, and many people think that the urban growth boundaries and the city limits are coterminous throughout the state. And if you look, there are a few instances where city limits extend considerably outside the boundaries of the urban growth boundary. It raises a question of why. Most cities wouldn't annex outside a boundary for obvious reasons. Okay. Most of that is historical. The boundary postdates the city limits.
Not either, do we?
But you're correct.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you much.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Winger.
You have any interest in adopting the amendments to set a full amendment of the bill?
I'm inclined to see the fiscal before I adopt amendments. Representative, thank you. Anyone else to testify on 3368? Close the public hearing. Open a work session on House Bill 3368 for the sole purpose of carrying the item over till Tuesday's agenda. So we'll close the work session and make sure that we request that fiscal statement. Colleagues, we have spent, we've talked about House Bill 2573 several times. This is the bill relating to submerged and submersible lands. Chief sponsor, Representative Roblin, has worked with the department and the Department of State Lands under Director Soliday's leadership and guidance, and I don't know how much personally involved she's been, have worked out what appears to be a rather elegant and appropriate solution to this, obviating the need for the legislation. So this bill goes poof.
Better.
Wow.
Thank you, Ms. Soliday.
Amen.
It's always nice when things get solved without needing us. That was 2573.
Close.
House Bill 28. Open a work session on House Bill 2879. Again, we don't have a fiscal statement on this. I believe we're getting close. This is the crossing private land to access recreational activities and maybe gardening. But I'm going to carry that bill over till Tuesday as well because we can't move it today. So I'm looking at the special associations representative here who's nodding his head, and that's what we'll do.
Madam Chair. We haven't yet adopted the dash fours.
No, we can do that in work session on Tuesday.
But I noticed there's a blank here.
Now.
3,100. Is it coming Tuesday?
I'm going to take a brief recess and consult with a couple members of the committee because I think we've got something we're ready to move forward on 2229. But let's 5 minute recess. let's call the House Committee on Land Use back to order and open a work session on House Bill 2229. This is the bill that we've spent the most time of all the bills this session on this bill, and it has benefited from the hard and good work of lots of other wise people who preceded us in this effort, two of whom are sitting in the room today. And I think we are ready. I think we've got a solution here, although we're not ready to move it because it requires just a little bit of tweaking. And Representative Hannah has some ideas about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As the Chair has said, a great deal of work has gone into this, including that which was done originally by the task force to bring us a base product. In addition to the members here, among others, and I know that I will leave someone out who has put forth effort, but Thousand Friends, the home builders, the realtors, cities and counties, Oregonians in Action, the League of Women Voters, and again, I'm probably leaving credit out someplace, but a number who have worked on this. Colleagues, if you happen to have a 2229-9 in front of you, it would help for you to be able to work through some of the proposed changes that I believe we are all agreeable to. And this is a hand-engrossed version, but I will run quickly through those changes. And then I believe we're all in agreement and we would carry this bill over to Tuesday, Madam Chair. So beginning on page 2, line 7, under E, conserved farmland, forest land, and other natural resources would be stricken. On page 10, line 10, the sentence that begins with, age the effects of population growth, population growth would be stricken, climate change stays, and then from conserve through services, from line 10 through 12 would be stricken. Fast forwarding to page 6, and I'm trying to use a pace so that you all have an opportunity to keep up with me if you're trying to do so. So bear with me for the deliberateness, but okay. I know this is a little bit quick, and we want you to have an opportunity to make this change.
29-9.
Page 6, line 7, items B, C, D, E, and F would be stricken. And Madam Chair, I believe, without any other technical change in nature, this would be a bill that the entire committee has found to be supportive of.
Thank you, Representative Hannah. I will ask the administrator to have that amendment drafted. Those changes, as Representative Hannah has put them in the record for the Dash 9 amendment. In the interest of broad-based support, perhaps even unanimous support, I am certainly happy to, I'm willing to accept those changes because I think the broad-based support is worth making some compromises. And I appreciate the spirit in which you offer those. And I look forward to having this bill back before us on Tuesday with those changes to that amendment. It is then with this also my intention that although we briefly discussed the Dash 8 amendment relating to transferable development rights, that we not bog this success down with that effort. And so it would be my expectation that on Tuesday we would move only a Dash 10 or Dash 11, whichever this ends up being, into the bill and no other amendments.
Madam Chair, I believe it'll actually be, because I think there already is a Dash 11, I think it'll be...
Okay.
Well, there's a dash two.
We will move whatever amendment.
Whatever it is.
With your changes, Representative Hannah. Yes, Representative Wingert.
I want to put it on the record that I believe slash or hope that the conversation continues with Representative Garrett and I think Mr. Honeycutt from Oregonians in Action on Principle D around the issue of equitable distribution of the, I'm not going to get this right, but he knows what I'm talking about, a balance of the costs and benefits of the system. I think there's some language that's close, and I do hope that ends up in the final product.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for hanging in there. I'm going to close this work session. The bill is carried over to Tuesday's calendar. And then we will send it on its merry way. Thank you for being here, Commissioner. It is a day of absent fiscal impact statements, colleagues.
The way it was this morning.
Deadlines are wonderful things, but they get people's attention. I am going to... Do you have amendments to move into 3225? Open a work session on House Bill 3225. This is the bill that addresses allowing some of the people who had Measure 37 claims but fell through the cracks on Measure 49, giving them an opportunity to get into the back of the queue. And we do have an amendment that I think reflects the conversation that we've had. So as soon as we get a chance to have...
Madam Chair.
Representative Hannah.
Would you... Are you introducing a different amendment? I have a dash three that has the language about timing.
Oh.
We have... And the
difference areas?
We have
1, 2, 3,
and
4. Dash 2 and dash 5. Does it have the fee? Where's mine?
Fee?
I'm looking. I'm only seeing. Yeah, I'm not seeing.
I'm sorry, colleagues. The dash 5 amendment is just now being printed. It is an amendment that adds the filing fee in order to address the fiscal impact statement. Representative Hannah and then Representative Cowan.
Well, I don't want to get out of order here, but I would like to move the dash threes because this is the language that addresses the timing issue and drawing the line of time from the 90 days to 120 days. It allows the additional 30 days, and I'm not sure if that ends up in the dash five or not, because we have several renditions here.
Ask Whitman about the other thing now.
Yeah. Let's get an LC opinion. If we moved to dash five first, actually, let's call Harrison and see if we can get him down here.
Stand in recess. Maybe.
I'm just wondering, the dash 5 still has it at 197 days. Or not 197, it has 97 days. And you're suggesting 100, okay. That's the debate between...
Yes.
Yes.
So then I probably would like to move the dash 3.
And since, does your dash 3 have the fee in it? I don't think so, probably. So we want to get elements of both of them. Which may mean, guess what, guys? We're going to be busy on Tuesday.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cowan.
I don't believe that's the only thing we're waiting for on this bill. There was discussion also of another amendment that would address specifically properties to individuals who are not seeking to sell their property, but older individuals who are trying to simply make some determinations on what they can do. And secondly, the use of county records that had been already developed.
Mr. Morrissey, is that in the dash 5? Do you know?
So that, is that amendment pending? So I'm frantically trying to figure out where.
County records stuff?
That's what I'm looking for. We should stand in recess.
Let's if an option. Recess for a few minutes.
Thank you.
Let's reopen the work session on House Bill 3225. Like I said, deadlines are wonderful things. They force people to actually come to grips with issues. And we have had a lot of good input, good thought on this bill as well. Some people raise opportunities that can be helpful to Oregonians, to property owners who are affected by this, and ways that we might actually be able to help speed things up to the benefit of property owners, to the benefit of the department, to the benefit of adjacent property owners so they have some clarity, and also some fiscal responsibility even. I think Representative Hannah has scribed all the ideas that we are going to try to tweak into the Dash 5 amendment, and I think it would be helpful to put those on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and colleagues. Likely I cannot give you a hand-engrossed version. These are simply ideas from among two or three different amendments, and so bear with us here. If you look at a Dash 5, you get some semblance of these ideas, but this is a, even though in the Dash 5 we talked about the fee, somehow the fee actually got, the dollar amount was left out. So the fee that we are discussing for the new claimants would be $175. The timeline, as discussed in the Dash 3, would move from the 97 to 120 days. We are discussing, and we'll have legislative counsel help us come up with criteria language as it applies to the hardship. So hardship criteria language that would help the agency determine hardship, and also that the use of existing county records to verify eligibility might take a step out of the process that might help expedite claims. I know that's a bit vague and hard to get to, but by Tuesday, Legislative Council likely will have us back a amended version of this bill that might be agreeable to all.
Yes, Representative, and actually we're hoping to be working with Legislative Council tomorrow on that, so that then our Legislative Fiscal Office has an opportunity to work with the department to make sure we understand the fiscal impact and that it is what we think it should be. And we may tap some of the people who've offered those ideas to make sure we get the language in correctly. Discussion on those ideas, sir.
No, just a question. Is the fiscal we think might be likely going to be enough to set it to Ways and Means?
We think not. We think with the addition of the fee, which would cover much but not all, that it would become essentially a de minimis fiscal impact.
Thank you.
Well, that change your revenue work session. You're going to need new revenue as well?
We'll probably get balls.
Fees don't count as revenue because they can only be used for the purpose of providing the service.
I was just wondering whether you were going to need a new revenue.
We'll probably have to make sure revenue says it still doesn't have a revenue impact. So, Representative Hannah, with that, we are again looking forward, hopefully, to a unanimous vote from committee. I know we can't bind anyone because we haven't seen language, but that's the intent here again.
That is, Madam Chair. Okay. I believe we have a piece of legislation that will help claimants.
Good. Okay, so we'll get to work on that. Close that work session. I think we have one more bill that we can't move. But we're moving them much closer. Reopen that work session for the purpose of carrying it over to Tuesday. That leaves House Bill, open a work session on House Bill 3099.
What are we up to now?
3099. Representative Clem, this was a bill that you put a lot of work into.
It's another one that needs to be carried over. We discovered early in the meeting today that there's one particular provision in there dealing with non-farm dwellings that's intended to come out of the bill. That changes the fiscal greatly.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to have that amendment made, and we'll have a new fiscal.
Do we think this bill may still end up having to take a trip to Ways and Means, though?
No. We don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
I can explain the issue. The issue is
how do you do that so that people know to expect it?
There was a situation where a ballot measure passed, and it talked about notification of two affected property owners if the law is changed and might increase or decrease the value of your property. Measure 56. And almost all the other provisions of this bill don't affect any existing property owners. That was the whole issue behind why some of these are proposed to be deleted, because no one's actually using them or doing them. One of the big ones was this issue of the non-farm dwellings, where people may have that and so therefore would be able to have the effect of their property value changed one way or the other with the new criteria. So that's a fundamental issue. Recalculating how many things would require this public notice, and then also I think understanding how many other bills might also require that public notice, and could they be piggybacked together, because it seems somewhat exceptionally large, only because it's a notice that looks like it's only because of this bill we're sending it. So that's kind of where we're at. We have to get something out, recalculate, and we'll be back Tuesday like the other two.
Okay. I look forward to it. Colleagues, I think because of the work we did leading up to today's meeting and in several recesses from today's hearing, Tuesday's meeting should be pretty administrative. We'll get the amendments out to you as soon as we have them. We'll get the fiscal impact statements out to you as soon as we have them, so that it would be possible, maybe even likely, that Tuesday we can simply make amendments and move bills. And I would hope that that's the way we would approach it. I had asked you all to reserve an extra hour today because I thought we might be getting down into that today. We're not going to do that because we're about to close for the day. I would ask you, even though I hope Tuesday is pretty much administrative, that you nonetheless reserve the extra hour Tuesday, because that will be our last opportunity to work together on House bills. And then shortly after that, we begin on Senate bills. Representative Cowan.
Madam Chair, I know that one of the committees that normally meets from 1 to 3 on Tuesdays is not going to meet on Tuesday. Now, I don't know whether moving it up is possible or helpful or useful to the committee, but I'm just telling you the time slot is open.
That would depend on what other members are doing during that slot.
Understanding that I don't know that.
Ways and Means Subcommittee.
Okay.
I don't know.
I simply wanted to make
you
aware.
Yeah. Representative Hannah?
I was just going to say that I really like Representative Cowan's idea, and it would be a scheduling dream if we moved that up 1 hour.
And Ways Means Sub is just next door. So.
Well, maybe we can do that instead then.
We can
figure out what room that is. And
give me a walkie-talk.
As long as you recognize that I am selling that time slot.
Oh, I see.
Madam Chair, I also...
Kidding.
Another committee I'm on has a good chair who, in honor of the hard work the committee's done, canceled one or more of the meetings at the end of next week. I mean, if you don't have too big a workload of Senate bills, you ought to consider canceling Thursday.
Indeed. I believe in rewarding good behavior and outstanding performance. And based on how we perform on Tuesday, that could be a real possibility.
I believe that's called a carrot.
So I am carrying over House Bill 3099 to the Tuesday agenda.
What about 2879?
Yes, we already carried over 2879. So Tuesday's agenda will look very much like today's agenda did. Thank you for your work. We're adjourned for today.
No, there'll be